From Inner Systems, it's the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. To learn more about this and other episodes, please visit podcast.healthydata.com.
We're here today with Dr. Michael Kirchhoff of Cooper Health. He is the Chief Innovation and Patient Safety Officer. Michael, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So for those who don't know, Cooper University Healthcare is an academic health system based in Camden, New Jersey, with 900 physicians and 663 beds. Today, we have dual topics that I think will be of interest to many of your peers across the United States, and that those topics are metadata and technical debt. Many organizations have a laundry list of things that they'd like to accomplish, and Dr. Kirchhoff, you've been working to ameliorate your technical debt. Tell our listeners kind of what is the breadth of your technical debt? How do you prioritize? How are you tackling this problem in an innovative way over at Cooper?
Sure. So, in general, I think a lot of organizations are grappling with technical debt. And really, the point of view that I bring from an innovation and patient safety side is the safety implications of technical debt. So we have a great team on the IT side and on the budgetary side of really addressing technical debt and really focusing on making sure that our lifecycle plans make sense and are keeping up with the latest technology. I have no complaints about our team there. They really do a fantastic job, and our co-CEOs, especially Dr. Mazzarelli, is really focused on making sure that life cycling, not only from our applications, but also our hardware, that we're really focusing on that as an organization. But what we talked about earlier was there's this other side of technical debt that I see looking at patient safety, and I hear about from other organizations when we talk not only about technology, but also about patient safety. And that specifically, there's another impact of technical debt other than the fact that I just have an application that's not being supported anymore, right? That's what everybody knows about, or I have a piece of hardware that is now out of warranty and I can't get it serviced, and now I suddenly have a large capital outlay. That's the technical debt most people are familiar with. And I think a lot of healthcare organizations are really understanding that they need to focus on that and understand that they need to address that. But there's other implications, and that's really what I wanted to talk to your listeners and viewers today about, which is, there are other impacts besides the bottom line, besides the money we need to spend to keep our systems up to date and our applications running properly and our hardware, safe from cyber attack and still within warranty. And that's, when I postpone doing some work, what are the implications for workflows and patient flows and patient information? And I think that's the thing that a lot of people lose focus of.
Right. So the main mission of a hospital or healthcare delivery system is to provide care. Increasingly with the transition to value-based care, it's also to keep patient populations well and out of receiving at least duplicative care or potentially avoidable care. So, could you walk our listeners through a concrete use case or anecdote of the last year or two when you've had conversations with leadership and with clinicians on your team about the implications of the patient safety implications of technical debt and how that actually played out and affected the prioritization of reducing that technical debt?
Sure. So a lot of times what happens is if you're going to incur technical debt, there's the things we just talked about, but there's also latent errors built into that. So for example, you're expanding as an organization and your electronic health record has a facility structure. And that facility structure, there's a lot of overhead associated with that. So for example, we need to build that out and test it, but then there's also all the other dependencies on that facility structure, all the downstream systems, right? I don't think anybody has a single best of breed. We all have legacy systems that our EMRs are interfacing with. Any changes in facility structure and the metadata associated with what's going on with patient flow or place of care, et cetera, all those require quite a bit of overhead on as far as testing and validation. And sometimes when organizations grow, they want to grow and get those new spaces up and running, and they either may not do the testing, which is a big mistake, But more often than not, they say, well, let's use existing structures because I can't afford to do the testing, and I realize that testing's important. So now you've introduced latent errors in the system. The technical debt I've taken on is not building out the representation of my organization appropriately, and then that may have potential implications later on. So for example, if you're in an organization, and for many organizations have disaster plans, and in those disaster plans, they've built out in their facility structure disaster beds. And now we have a sudden need for new space. So an organization may consider using some of those beds designated for these surge plans as patient care area. But the point is, there are downstream dependencies related to that. So a classic patient safety example would be, I've used existing facility structure that calls the bed, surge bed XYZ. And now there's a code blue or medical emergency in that, and that goes to our downstream legacy systems, to our operators that call an overhead page, and now they're calling overhead page to surge space XYZ as opposed to some physical location that clinicians know about. So by kicking down the road, even building out facility structures and doing this downstream testing, et cetera, you introduce latent errors in the system that may have implications later on. And in our own organization, as we identify those, we then go to leadership and go, hey, guys, you missed this, and we go back and do that. But when you're initially thinking about the total cost of ownership around expanding an organization and expanding the facility, you really need to think about there's other costs associated with that, not just the PCs I'm putting in that space or the monitors I'm putting in that space, but it's also that I really look at the facility structure and how that integrates all our downstream systems, et cetera. And that's something that on the safety side, we've been drawing a lot of attention to, so that we don't fall into that risk and introduce those latent errors into our system and can protect our patients in the future when that information then flows to other downstream systems.
Yeah, and you also mentioned not only physical, the integration of physical and digital, but also just within the digital. For example, when a lot of organizations are going through application rationalization, if you're mapping old metadata to new metadata, then the lookup tables don't work anymore, for example, in some cases.
Yeah, and that's a classic example. I know we were going to talk both about technical debt and metadata. This is where the two really meet, right? Yeah. Because with all these transactions is the metadata, the physical location, and the virtual location. And those have to align. And sometimes, for example, we build a new tower, and now we've built out all this new facility structure. We have old facility structure, and that metadata, someone has to go back and rationalize that and make sure it all aligns. Because if you don't fix those, you potentially introduce latent errors. And those latent errors might be as dangerous as sending somebody to the wrong location for a code, but they might be insidious, like, for example, the accommodation code that's associated with that facility structure may come across as a med-surg when reality is a step-down or critical care space. Now you're missing out on that facility charge because the metadata on the accommodation code is different and somebody forgot to fix that. So there's a lot of cost to rationalization and growing. And part of that is the safety component and the metadata associated with it, but also understanding the total cost of ownership of these migration strategies and making sure you're going back and having the time and resources allocated to make sure you're looking at all that legacy stuff and doing all the appropriate stress testing to make sure that information flows to where it needs to flow, billing is proper, and that those physical locations match up with the virtual location in the system.
So it sounds like if any of our listeners are persuaded and interested by this application rationalization, technical debt awareness about the implications technical debt has on patient safety, it sounds like a lot of governance and processes and testing are kind of what they need to begin implementing in order to account for these risks.
Yeah, what it comes down to is just best industry practice, right? Your information technology department really needs to make good stakeholder analysis, good project management, good communication skills. It's all stuff everybody who's listening just knows about, but what a lot of teams fail to realize is the extent of it and how many resources you actually need to do a full stakeholder analysis and a full risk analysis of these migrations to make sure that you've looked at all those downstream systems and not just that the information flows, but that when it pops up at the other end, does that end user, does that data make sense to them? Do they know where to go? And if you forget to look at your operators and now you're pushing them physical locations that no longer make sense, or if you're pushing it to your coders and your billing department and those accommodation codes don't make sense, you're going to miss out.
So I did mention just a moment ago about metadata, which is the second topic that we're going to cover today. And on a top, I mentioned kind of screwing up mapping between lookup tables when you're mapping from old metadata to new metadata. The topic of metadata itself is becoming of increasing interest to many healthcare delivery systems as Gen AI rises in prominence as a topic that everyone is focusing on. In particular, when healthcare delivery systems are looking to integrate Gen AI into their healthcare delivery system, they often need to train models on their own data of different kinds, whether it be PHI or other sorts of metadata. And I think we were today we're going to discuss kind of what data governance, what needs to happen to ensure that you have the right metadata in order to train your Gen AI models, and kind of what were best practices in the past and how are they evolving now?
Yeah, so this is a hard question to answer, and obviously there's the broader concepts of like bias in the data, et cetera, and healthcare qualities when you're deploying these systems, and that's where that data really shines. But the other is the simple answer is you don't know, because when we look at these systems and we're looking at sort of the emergent characteristics of the hidden layers in these systems, we don't really understand a lot of times what those features are that the system is keying on to understand to make that generative decision. And for humans, a lot of times that may be, well, the diagnosis makes sense, right? But it may turn out that location may play a role there. So when we're thinking about the data and the metadata you're going to use in training systems, the more data, the better, right? We're seeing that across the industry. Bigger generative systems, the bigger the data set, the better. The more rich the data, the better. And other contexts of that data, specifically the metadata, right? So maybe not just patient demographics and diagnosis gets me to where I need to go, but maybe the system at the hidden layer is keying on location data, time of day data, et cetera. So if you're not saving that data and then putting it into your data sets for your training, you may be missing out on that. And what further confounds that is you often don't know how the original base system was trained. Was the base system trained with that metadata or not? Does introducing that metadata align with the previous training regimen or not? And then when there's a mismatch between the data set of initial training and then fine tuning, how does that affect the emergent features in the latent space? And how does that affect the decision making and the weights of that? And that's hard to know. So it's not only important to have this data because it helps the AI key on items that the human observer may not key on and get you more robust answers, but it also has implications for off-the-shelf AI that now you're training. And what was the training regimen initially? What was that data? What was the metadata? And do those things align? And then the bigger 50,000-foot view, you know, in as much as that, what does this metadata do with respect to bias, and all the other things that we're really focused on in healthcare, and so much so that, you know, Joint Commission is starting to focus on this and the FDA, et cetera. You know, this bias in these generative systems is a hot button topic, and the metadata and understanding the context of the data and the person that is part of that data in the system is super, super important for understanding bias and outcomes.
You know, some of the examples you provide remind me of classic public health case studies. For example, I think in the 1970s, there was not clear evidence at the time that both systolic and diastolic blood pressure were worth measuring, that there was meaning to the lower number. And so we didn't used to collect that information. And it wasn't only until later that we found, I think Professor Mike Clagg from Johns Hopkins found out, hey, you know what? Both numbers actually do have value and meaning. And gosh, I wish we'd been collecting both numbers for a long time. So it could be for future discoveries. Or another one that's kind of a fun one to talk about is before the Clean Indoor Air Act in the late 20th century, coffee drinking was an indicator of lung cancer because it was correlated with smoking. People used to have a cigarette with their coffee. And so it may be helpful to predict lung cancer by capturing who's a coffee drinker. But of course, those are the sorts of things that just seem so irrelevant. There's no causal relation. Why would I care about coffee if I want to study lung cancer? So just take that as an analogy for, you know, 60 years later with different kinds of contextual data and data elements and data space about what might be relevant and predictive for either a patient's health or for something that could help train a Gen AI model.
Yeah, and this is key in the emergence the emergent characteristics of the model. If the human, again, may think this data point is irrelevant to the outcome from a face validity perspective, but it turns out it actually is important for the model. And that makes interpretability research very difficult. It makes explainability very difficult. So it's a fine balance. The more interpretable I want something to be, the more explainable I want a model to be, the more I'm going to give data that has face validity to a human observer, that this makes sense, that these are associated or correlated. But it turns out more data density, other metadata may actually help the system become more accurate. The converse is also true. Sometimes this data erroneously trains the system for outcomes. So again, on the interpretability side and face validity side, it can cut both ways. And it just really speaks to the need to do this type of research.
So metadata can provide a kind of audit if you're trying to, if there have been problems interpreting past data.
Yeah, sometimes. But it also may provide a more data-rich environment for the model then to key on a characteristic of the data set that a human wouldn't necessarily pick up on. And potentially make it more accurate.
I'd love to hear about, to contextualize this conversation about metadata in your work with sepsis. I think that Cooper Healthcare is a national leader in sepsis care. And I think you have an interesting story about metadata and sepsis. Is that right?
Yeah. So early on, we were doing a lot of this early work in understanding sepsis. We were collecting had face validity. Heart, you know, what's your heart rate this hour? What's your heart rate next hour? What's your blood pressure this hour? What's your heart rate, your heart blood pressure the next hour? And it turns out that overall trend is really, really important. But when you want to start to create models that predict that earlier and earlier and earlier, the amount of variation, minute to minute, second to second, is actually a stronger predictor of patients that are going to then deteriorate before the obvious deterioration of high heart rate and low blood pressure. Mm-hmm. Once you have high heart rate and low blood pressure, you know, you're really behind the eight ball. Picking up that decrease in variation earlier on is very important. So when we did a lot of our initial early studies, we were capturing at the bedside heart rate and blood pressures minute to minute, second to second. But in the data sets that we exported, we did it every hour. And then what happened is we did some great research in that space. And then when we started to learn that understanding this data at smaller and smaller time intervals and understanding that variability could be predictive, we couldn't go back and redo those studies because we just jettisoned all that other data that would have been potentially helpful. Now, the issue there is, you know, back in the day, is it very expensive to store all this data. As that's getting cheaper and more inexpensive and easier to do, I would always make the argument that just collect as much data with as much density as you can, because you never know when that's going to be helpful, when it's economically feasible to do it. I wish we had that second-to-second heart rate data, because we could have done a lot more research. We ultimately went on to do some of that work, but the initial work, really, the data set didn't support some of the new findings people were getting out of that data, which was that second-to-second variation.
And when it comes to sepsis, just even having like 20 minutes earlier notification or an hour earlier notification can make a lot of difference, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So how would you advise health systems listening to this how to balance the cost of just collecting a bunch of data? And by the way, if it's a lot of information, it's not interpreted and it's not and it's just garbage. You know, it needs to be. How do you advise an organization to not? You know, you can lose the meaning of the data if you just have everything collecting everything all the time. How do you advise them how to how to balance cost and organization and future value, potential value? How would you do that?
Yeah, no, that's a really good point because, you know, the classic counterexample here is IoT, right? If I have my watch collecting a bunch of accelerometer data and heart rate data, but it doesn't know the difference between when I'm sleeping and I'm awake or when it's off or when it's on, et cetera, there's a lot of garbage in that data. And despite having great data density, might not be helpful. So it's the same as the technical debt discussion. Good stakeholder analysis, getting the right experts and subject matter experts in there to talk about it, know what the latest literature shows in terms of how these data points may relate to the outcome you're interested in, and then balancing that with the total cost of either curating the data, to your point, does the data make sense? Is the data clean or is there garbage, right? That there's a cost related to that, either technical or human, to look and validate that data, and then there's the ultimate cost of that storage and manipulation of that data. So understanding the need and the potential benefits of more metadata and data density and match that with the total cost of doing that work, and then having just really good project management, getting the right stakeholders at the table and having that conversation, because in the past we just never had that conversation. So my recommendation would be just have the conversation so at least you know what you risk by not saving all the data.
Well, I appreciate your time with us today, Michael. We covered a lot of information from technical debt to metadata. You've kind of already addressed this, but if there was something that you wish you knew, if you could speak to Michael Kirchhoff of 4 years ago, what would you tell yourself kind of considering patient safety with regards to technical debt and reviewing metadata, what would you tell yourself?
To really think about the implications of it. What I find myself doing a lot of now is really looking at the implications of this data as it pertains to bias and equality and access in healthcare, because that's ultimately, we're charged with the good keeping and the health of our communities, and knowing how whatever tool we're applying applies to our particular communities and their demographics and their data is something that I think every health system struggles with. And it's a big item for us to have an eye on because it's our mandate, right? We need to care for those in our communities, and those communities vary from place to place and time to time. And knowing how systems may or may not meet the needs of a particular community is something we're focusing on a lot now, because in the past, many vendors did not focus on that. And we find we're playing a little catch up on that right now. And knowing that back in the day and really asking those questions, especially of the vendors who were creating the systems, to make sure that they have inclusive data that is representative of our patient population and that that data is free of biases, is something those were not frequently asked questions 3-5 years ago. Those are questions we ask every time now.
For our listeners, this has been Dr. Michael Kirchhoff, the Chief Innovation and Patient Safety Officer at Cooper Health. Michael, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
From InterSystems, this has been the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. Thank you for listening.